the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. And Andrea, I think that I've talked to you about this before. There are two things that are factual about me. One, I have a degree in history. And two, I said that President Trump, Donald Trump would win the election. And that's why I'm so excited to have found Professor Lichtman, who is a distinguished professor of history at American University. And he also has written the book, The Embattled Vote in America. And he joins us on the line. I wanted to talk to you today, Professor, about President Trump's speech to the UN and his claim that he has done more than any other president in American history. What were your thoughts when you heard that?
My thought that claim was about as credible as his claim that he should get an A+. For the disastrous response to the hurricane in Puerto Rico that's resulted in almost 3,000 deaths. For Donald Trump, everything has to be the best, perfect. And if it isn't, of course, he's got to blame it on someone else. And it's not surprising to me at all that the response was derisive laughter from his audience, a sophisticated audience who knows full well that the accomplishments of his administration have been meager and, for the most part, negative. The world does not applaud pulling out of the climate change agreement and undermining environmental protections at a time when climate change and catastrophic weather changes are threatening all of humanity. The world doesn't applaud pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal that keeps the Middle East from having a nuclear arms race. The world does not applaud trade wars.
Professor, I want to ask you specifically about that, the world reaction. Every time I'm overseas, I get an, I'm sorry. Oh, we're so sorry.
Like we're being held hostage.
About your three-ring circus over in the United States. This obviously doesn't help our perception of how people see us, especially Europe, especially countries all across the world. For him to continue even and poke fun at the Germans and say, oh, yeah, I wasn't expecting that response, this can't help our image. And I want you to address why that is so detrimental, especially going forward for us.
Our image is extremely important. Ever since the end of World War II, the United States has depended upon collective security among the free nations of the world. It kept us from a world war during the Cold War, and it's given us a united response to numerous crises since then. Perhaps one of the best examples of that was under President George H.W. Bush, where he was able to put together an extraordinary international coalition to combat the aggression of Iraq in Kuwait. Also, it is very important that we keep our eye on what is called soft power, our ability to gain cooperation in our national interests from other nations, which very much depends upon their perception of the United States. Finally, the United States, for so long, really has been a democratic beacon to the world, inspiring freedom around the world, democracy around the world. That is something that America cannot forfeit, and we cannot forfeit our moral standing in the world. That is our concern with human rights, which seems to have completely gone by the boards in this administration.
What do you say to those supporters who really applaud statements like today that is the reason so many of them show up to rallies like he is giving all over the country when he says, you know, well, it's our economy and jobs are back and we're standing up to North Korea and I'm not going to meet with Iran? What do you say to supporters who just say, you know what, all of that is worth it? Being isolationist and having a stronger economy are worth everything else that he does?
Well, that's completely incorrect. It's certainly not worth threatening our environment, threatening our true survival on this planet. Climate change is real. It's here. It's in the fires in California. It's in greatly strengthened hurricanes. It's in floods in Miami when it's not even raining. We're talking about Miami and other coastal cities being underwater in 20 years. It's not worth dividing us by gender, by race, by religion. It's not worth a president who has forfeited all of the moral authority of the presidency, both at here and at home. And his foreign policy isn't working. He's gotten nothing out of North Korea except to pump up and give prestige and world standing to one of the worst most brutal dictators in the world, a man who's starved his own people, killed his political enemies, established a gulag of horrific concentration camps. Pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal has done nothing but destabilize the Middle East. We do have a good economy, but we had a good economy for a very long time now. Donald Trump, under Trump, there's been no greater job creation than there was under President Obama. And right now, the trade war, the needless trade war that gets us nothing, but only hurts Trump voters, is in the long run going to threaten our economy, as is the crushing burden of debt created by this rich-friendly tax cut plan that Donald Trump has set forth. So it's time for ordinary Americans who support Trump to understand that Trump is not a populist. Populists is a longstanding American tradition of supporting ordinary people and adopting policies that promote the interests of ordinary people. Donald Trump is a plutocrat. His tax cuts are going overwhelmingly to the wealthy. His deregulations threaten the environment of ordinary people and protections from things like fraud and cheating by the big corporations. And his trade war is going to hurt the farmers and the consumers of America.
With regard to Iran, Professor, you touched on that a little bit, too, with the exchange between President Trump and President Rouhani, the taunting, the name-calling, the corrupt dictatorship comments, the weakness of intellect, that obviously is not going to help any sort of either arms deal or any deal, any relationship that we have with Iran at this point, is it?
That's right. There's no chance right now to have any kind of arrangement that's going to place the Iran nuclear deal. People misunderstand that deal. That deal was not designed to change the regime in Iran or turn Iran into a pro-American nation. It was designed to do one thing, prevent Iran from developing a nuclear weapon and having a deadlier nuclear arms race in the least stable part of the world. And it was working. Donald Trump's own administration certified time and again that Iran was sticking to the nuclear deal. And Donald Trump has upset that very important deal and so far gotten nothing out of it, just as he has really gotten nothing out of promoting and pumping up the dictator Kim Jong-un.
Right. I have to know, what was it, based on what information you were studying, led you, because for me, when I thought that President Trump was going to win, that Donald Trump at the time during his campaigning, and for me, it was almost at the beginning, because I had seen so much hateful, so many hateful messages online that I thought, wow, this guy could be our next president from his very first speech when he made all those comments about Mexico. What were you examining that led you to believe that he would win that election?
I have a system called the Keys to the White House that's been successful in predicting elections since before you were born, since 1984. I haven't missed. And the system is very simple. The system is based on the theory and the proof that elections for president are essentially up or down votes on the party holding the White House. And if enough of these key factors go against the party holding the White House, it's going to be a change election, and the incumbent party is going to be turned out. And you had many keys going against the incumbent Democrats in 2016. They took a big pasting in the midterm elections of 2014. Okay. They didn't have their sitting president running again. He was constitutionally barred. They had these pesky third parties draining votes. They didn't have a big foreign policy triumph in the second term to match the killing of bin Laden in the first term. And they didn't have a big domestic accomplishment in the second term to match the Affordable Care Act. So my analysis was based on the fact, not on Donald Trump or Donald Trump's campaign, but on the fact that this was going to be a change election and any generic Republican was going to win the election. In fact, as we know, Donald Trump almost blew that election, even though it was favorable to the Republicans. He lost the popular vote and came perilously close in a number of states to losing the Electoral College vote.
I was absolutely someone who thought Hillary Clinton would be our next president, unlike you two, who obviously chose, predicted, I shouldn't say chose.
I won so many bets.
Correctly.
Predicted.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was in New York. I said,
I took a lot of heat for that.
I bet you,
did. At American University in Washington, D.C. Washington,
right?
D.C. is not a hotbed of Trump country.
Oh, my gosh. All right, so
but
I went.
I did get a note from Donald Trump himself.
Really?
After the election.
Wow.
The note was written on the Washington Post article where I first predicted his win. And in his very distinctive magic marker handwriting, it said, "Congrats, Professor. Good call, Donald J. Trump." That's now hanging in my office.
I was going to say, I would keep that.
Where's my letter? All I got was I got Scott Stantis wax on live radio. We did. The political cartoonist.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune had to have one thigh, one armpit, his back, and his nose hairs waxed on the air.
So because he chose...
He thought that Trump would not win.
He predicted poorly. I want to know, Professor, what you think going forward is going to happen. You hear about the big blue wave that's coming this November.
Yep.
What are your thoughts on this election coming up in just 2 months?
I don't have a formal system for midterms, but it does look like there's a blue wave.
Okay.
But as I point out in my new book, The Embattled Vote in America, one of the dangers that Democrats face is concerted efforts at voter suppression by Republicans. Stringent voter ID laws, draconian purges of the voter rolls, closing of polling places, restrictions on registration. This poses a real danger to the possibility of a blue wave. But aside from that, Trump is going to be the issue in the midterm elections. And so long as his approval rating is sharply underwater, and in particular, those who strongly disapprove far outweigh those who strongly approve, it looks like it's going to be a very good Democratic year. And remember, midterm elections are almost always negative for the party holding the White House. And I don't think this year is going to be an exception. And that's why Republicans are pushing so desperately hard to confirm Brett Kavanaugh as soon as possible, cavalierly dismissing these very serious allegations of sexual assault and harassment because they're afraid the Democrats would retake the Senate and block any subsequent Republican appointee to the Supreme Court, giving Republicans a dose of their own medicine, who, remember, held Merrick Garland hostage for almost a year without even giving him a hearing. It's remarkable now Republicans are talking about process when they committed the greatest violation of process with respect to a Supreme Court nominee in the history of the country.
Mm-hmm. It's such an incredible times that we live in. I don't know if incredible is the right way to put it, but before we go, to your comments about voter registration and voter purging the rolls, there are a lot of our listeners who think, what's the big deal about that? Even President Trump famously said, you need an ID to go grocery shopping.
Right.
What do you say to those folks who say, we should make sure that people are registered to vote, even though proof of fraudulent voting is so low?
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it low, it's vanishingly small. When states had to go to court, it's the biggest test, to defend their voter ID laws, which are supposed to stop voter impersonation at the polls, Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, in their court cases, could not cite a single example in their history of voter suppression at the polls. North Carolina did a 12-year study, and they came up with exactly two cases of voter impersonation at the poll. So this is the case of creating a false problem and creating a solution that does prevent otherwise eligible people from voting. And the rub is, it might affect only a few percent. Most people do have IDs, but 3, 4, 5% don't, and they tend to be part of the Democratic base, young people, poor people, and racial minorities. And when you're talking about 2 to 3%, that's a lot of people. And that's millions of people, and that's enough to turn close elections.
Right, and that's why our voter turnout here, well, in Chicago, we're typically a blue state, as you know, but our voter turnout last time, Professor, I think was 16% for a midterm, if even that high. It's just horrible. And we always try and do the polling and look at the numbers and the millennials, why aren't they voting? Because they don't recognize or resonate with either party. They can't say, well, I'm Republican or I'm Democrat. They're looking for some sort of other solution.
Well, the truth is we have a two-party system. There aren't other solutions. Mm-hmm. And if you don't decide to vote for one of the two parties, you are, in effect, sadly, abdicating your vote.
Right.
There are no members of Congress, for example, who aren't Republicans or Democrats or independents who caucus
right.
with the Republicans or Democrats. Look mm-hmm. at your state of Illinois.
Right.
All the office holders are Republicans or Democrats.
Yep.
That practically is the choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, to recap, again, we've been talking to Professor Alan Lichtman. He's the author of The Embattled Vote, an American and Distinguished Professor at American University. Just to recap, when the president said he has done better than any president in the history of the United States, that's a no on that, right?
It's a big no. His audience rightly laughed at him. Franklin Roosevelt, just in his first 100 days, passed 15 major pieces of legislation. You know how many major pieces of legislation Trump has passed in a year and a half plus? One.
Ooh.
The tax cut bill.
Oh, there you go.
One. And that's very controversial. Most Americans are not real happy about it because they understand most of the benefits are going to the rich. We now have a distribution of income that's so unequal that it matches the unequal distribution of income in 1929 in the eve of the Great Depression.
Wow. Well, Professor, I want to thank you so much for joining us and invite you back to the show anytime you're available and have a conversation with us, because these are important topics. You can find the Embattled Vote in America wherever you buy books, and follow Professor Lichtman at Alan Lichtman on Twitter. Thank you so much, sir. Have a great evening.
Thanks, Professor.
My great pleasure. You guys, too. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
More after this on 720 WGN.